she inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everyone. This is Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, a fun and informative place where we don't ever tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thanks so much for joining us and for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. And of course, a big thanks to one of our most loyal and long-standing partners. This is our 10-year anniversary year, and the Chapman Automotive Group has been with us from year one. And every day, in every way, they are doing their share, showing they care. And it's not just because of the many fuel-efficient cars they sell at all of their dealerships, which is great, but it's about what they do to make a difference for all of their dealerships in terms of their sustainability practices. They make a difference for our community, and in turn, of course, they make a difference for the planet. So kudos to their community green team that has shown up big time to make a big, huge difference in sustainability and for the environment. Thank you, Chapman. If you want to know more about them, visit them at chapmantucson.com. And you know what? It doesn't matter where you are in the country, they'll help you. Trust me, it's all internet these days. So, and tell them Mrs. Green sent you. Let's get ready for a true renovation angel in every sense of the word. And I always wonder for our listeners, can you hear me smiling? Because I am smiling. Please join me in welcoming my friend and a global game changer, Steve Feldman, who is the president and co-founder of Renovation Angel, America's premier recycler of, are you ready for this? Luxury pre-owned kitchens and renovation items. It is an amazing story. Steve Feldman, we finally made this happen. Thank you to Kelly King. And warm welcome, my friend.
Well, thank you so much. I feel at home being on the radio again. It's been years since I was in the radio business. So love to do the radio. Thank you for accommodating me and doing this over the phone as time is so tight. But eventually I'll make it to Tucson and visit you at your studios.
I hope so. And we will always have something to talk about. And thank you for taking the time. I mean, it really is a great story and one that I was excited to have happen and happy that I met you at DEMA. I think it was last July. And we'll talk about even what DEMA is because I don't want to use acronyms that nobody knows what I'm talking about. The Domestic Estate Managers Association people. So, Steve, this is, I'd love you to take as much time as you want just telling us the story of how it all came about that you started Renovation Angel. It was almost from a place of darkness, or maybe at the very least, some challenging times for you personally and the economy, and you tell your story. It's all about you.
Absolutely. Well, as I said, I was in the radio business for 18 years, started as a rock and roll DJ.
I love
it. And when I left,
love it.
That was my start. And when I left, I was the senior marketing manager for two Clear Channel stations in Providence, Rhode Island. And I worked for the first IMIS in the Morning syndicate in Providence.
You are kidding me. I don't think I heard that part of your story. I love
Yes, it's a little bit of radio insider, but IMIS was just out of New York for years, and actually the owner of our station contacted him in 1992 and said, if you ever syndicate, would you consider going on our station? And we were actually the first independent syndicate to pick him up in 93, and then, of course, he went on to become a national success.
Yes.
But what's behind that is I'm a recovered addict. I was a teenage drug and alcohol abuser, and I had two serious bouts of suicidal depression at 19 and 30. And I got this recovery, and 5 years into my recovery, I realized that I was on the receiving end of a lot of help from a lot of people, and it was time to give back. And that's when we got IMIS, and I started making a lot more money in the radio business. I started giving it back to the nonprofit that had given me my life back. And that went along great for about 4 years. And then in 1998, I had the opportunity to go do the fundraising for this outreach project that was, doing a lot of different things to help addicts. And I was flying around America, and it was very exciting. You know, I was in Beverly Hills, I was in Golden, Colorado, I was in West Palm Beach. And while many people, you know, love my story, I wasn't raising a lot of money.
Right.
And
how honest, yes.
You know, and I remember, you know, I put this on my website. It was like $20,000 spent in travel, $7,500 earned. And, you know, anybody knows whether you're in the nonprofit or the business world, that just doesn't fly.
That's not a successful business model.
that is what we would say, you know, classified as didn't make it as a fundraiser. And fortunately, on one of my trips from West Palm, I picked up Forbes magazine and I read a very interesting article, ironically enough, titled The Workaholic. And it was about Brewster Kopp, who was this amazing, you know, Harvard MBA graduate who worked for President Johnson. He worked for Digital Corp, First Bank Boston, and he was now spending 90% of his time helping charity. So I thought, wow, you know, what a great guy to meet. So I call him up and I said, Mr. Kopp, I have this worthy charity that's helping addicts. Will you meet with me? And I got a meeting with him and he said, I really love what you're doing. Come back in a few months. And when I came back in a few months, he said, look, there are a lot of fundraisers in Greenwich. Why don't you come over and let's go swimming at this 100 millionaire's house and we'll see what happens. And you know, this is a really true story. I never got in the swimming pool. I met with this donor. She was very green. She was very into organic food. She loved, you know, what we were doing as a charity because, you know, we were providing jobs for addicts. And so she started, you know, funding us, and it was great. So I had my first major donor. And then a year later, she lost $30 million in the stock market in 1 week in 2001. And I'll never forget that day. I showed up at her house, and she was visibly shaking.
Yes.
And handing me...
Understandably.
Me kind of like my... And kind of like letting me know, this is your last check. Don't ask me for any more money. And I'm thinking, well, it took me literally 2 years to find this one donor.
Right, right.
Who am I going to find now? And when I used to go visit her, she'd always say, well, that's the Queen of Iran next door, you know. That's her house.
Literally.
And that's a Rockefeller home. And it was. It was Farah Pahlavi, the Shah's wife, had been living there for many years. And I come out of this meeting with my donor, who's now my ex-donor, and I see a sign in the Queen's driveway, and it says, Demolition in Progress. And I drive up to the house, and the house is gone. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, why not earn the money for charity by taking out the kitchens, the lighting, the bath fixtures, and sell them?
And like literally, I just have to press pause here. Was that like an aha Kodak struck
totally
by lightning
was.
And say, OMG, this is all being destroyed for nothing?
And it totally was an aha moment. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, obviously the idea came to me, and I believe the idea came from, you know, a much higher place than me.
I'm with you.
Know, you. It was definitely,
I'm with you. It's
it was
the Mrs. Green's World story. It was not my idea. We got picked.
You know, it was given to me as a gift, and I remember going back to Brewster Kopp and saying, you know, do you know anybody in the construction industry? And he said, yes, talk to this person. He's in construction. The guy said, yeah, good idea. Then I went to a real estate agent, and I'm going to tell you the long story because
it's great. No, I love it. I love good stories like this. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's compelling. It's authentic. You go. It's yours.
So the entrepreneur has to know what they're going to go through to really be an entrepreneur.
Yes.
So I have this amazing meeting with a real estate agent at a really big firm in Greenwich, and she likes my idea, and she says, call me back in 2 weeks. And I actually met an architect and builder who we still do business with today from New Canaan in the waiting room in that real estate office. And they were my first industry professionals. And so I called this woman back 2 weeks later, and the secretary answers, and they say, we are so sorry. She passed away last week.
You are kidding me.
I am not kidding you. And so I called Brewster back, and I said, I'm so sorry, but your contact at this real estate firm passed away. Do you know another real estate agent I can call? So he puts me in touch with Sandra Douglas. At the time, it was Country Real Estate in Greenwich. And she loved the idea, and she says, I know the editor of the real estate paper in Greenwich. She will write an article on you. And this is starting to become the unheard of miracle. It's like you don't come from the middle of nowhere, because I was based up in the Catskills in New York,
right.
Upstate New York. Show up in Greenwich, and you only have a couple of contacts, and
where there are a lot of people with high net worth.
Right. And the article is going to be about you going into these wealthy people's demolition houses, but Greenwich is an early adopter market. They love financially savvy ideas. They love new ideas. So they jumped on it. They said, let's get together. And I know a woman who's tearing her house down, and we're going to have a meeting, and we're going to do a photo shoot with you and this person and the house, and we're going to show the house being demolished. And on Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, I am driving to Greenwich.
You're making this up.
No, I am not making this up. This is a true story.
OMG.
Yes, and I'm listening for the traffic. I mean, I'm only to Middletown, New York. I'm still an hour and a half from Greenwich, and I'm hearing, you know, what's going on in New York City. And, you know, I just turn around and go home like everybody else that day. And for like 3 days, the world was shut down.
Right.
And I remember, and again, this is where I wasn't going to let this go. I called the editor, and I said, look, we cannot run a picture of a house being demolished after 9/11.
True.
Nobody
that
wants to see this. And she said, go get me a picture of something being built in Greenwich. I mean, at your facility, and we'll run the story with that kind of picture. So the article ran, you know, 5 weeks after 9/11 on October 19th, and I got 36 phone calls. And the people who called me were hedge fund managers, architects, builders, kitchen designers, real estate agents. And for the next 4 years, with volunteers in a one-ton dump truck, we were driving around to these demolitions, really doing the same program that we offer today, free white glove removal, because the volunteers were also really highly skilled construction workers and construction managers. We were doing free pickup. We were giving them a tax deduction, and we were reducing their disposal costs. And the Greenwich market was really the best place to start this, because when I actually launched it after 4 years of the pilot program, there were 195 homes being demolished in Greenwich just that year, just that one town, you know?
Yeah, but I have to ask you this. You have to fill in a couple of blanks for me, because we went from A to Z. So you see this, you have this idea, it starts taking on traction. So there's all these affirmations you're getting. This is the right path for you to take. So you had the idea. How did you didn't just like say, okay, and we'll put it here, and then we'll resell it, and then we'll have a nonprofit. Fill in some of the little steps.
Okay, you're absolutely right. So the first couple of years, we were dragging these beautiful kitchens back up to the Catskills.
Like, where did you put it? Yeah.
You know, garages, and you know, one of the people we work with got rented a trailer body, a tractor trailer body, and we put it in there, and you know, we were just kind of squirreling the stuff away, and you know, local contractors would buy like a $100,000 cherry kitchen for like $4,000, you know, and we thought, oh wow, you know, it's $4,000 we didn't have, but it didn't make sense. And I remember thinking, this is not making any money. Like, you know, if I had to pay for the labor or the trucking. And we had a couple of breaks happen in 2004. This is our third year of our pilot program.
Right.
We found some people who were selling on eBay, and they started offering our kitchens on eBay. And now all of a sudden we sold a kitchen for $15,000.
Wow.
I was like, ooh, this is starting to be like the benchmark.
Right. This is a good business model.
Right. If we weren't the first, we were one of the early people to sell pre-owned kitchens on eBay. And eBay was just, you know, it was really hot in the early 2000s.
Right, right.
So we started selling kitchens on eBay. At the same time, I realized I had to go back and spend more time in Greenwich. So I had met a woman who used to work at bedandbreakfast.com. She was one of their editors. And I'd only met her once. And I said, Sandy, would you tell me a bed and breakfast that would actually give me a room so I can come to Greenwich every week and grow this program? And without any hesitation, she said, Steve, I have an apartment over my garage at my home in Greenwich. I will give you a key. So I was now living in Greenwich free of charge.
Oh, my gosh. this is the thing that was meant to happen.
Yeah, and that family basically adopted me part-time every week for 3.5 years. And to this day, I bring them an apple pie every year at Thanksgiving to thank them as being one of my early sponsors and supporters.
Yes, but I want to ask you, like, when you say you had volunteers, why were people volunteering and how could they? Like, did they have other jobs? How did volunteers support you?
That's a great. They were other recovered addicts that working with the, they had gotten their recovery through the same program I had gotten my recovery from. So, and in the beginning, that's who did all the work. So, we kind of fast forward through that pilot project phase, and then, the fundraising had really kind of like run its course.
Right.
So I needed to go get a day job, and I thought, let me get a day job that relates to the, recycling program.
Yeah, Iran's Kitchen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I thought, if I just get a job somewhere, if I go back to selling radio or if I do something, that's not going to help me.
Not good. Not good. Right.
So I got a job as a territory manager at Taylor Recycling Facility, and there's somebody you might want to interview. They were doing construction debris recycling. They were one of the first.
Taylor?
They were doing the Taylor Recycling Facility, okay. Montgomery, New York. I will make the connection for you.
Okay, awesome.
And they were pioneers in this whole sorting process where, the construction debris dumpsters would come in and they had these crews that would be like, okay, this is metal, this is wood, this is stuff that we're going to turn into mulch, this is stuff that they were recycling sheetrock.
Way back then.
They were doing this in, I think they started in the 90s. So I went to work for them only for about 4 months. And, we were trying to do a partnership, but it didn't really work out because they were in New York and my market was Connecticut.
Right,
and so,
right.
I saw that it wasn't going to work out and I launched on my own. And it was one of another one of these decisions to just say, I'm just going to do this. And I quit my day job and I got a little bit of seed money and I started my nonprofit, which is called Recovery Unlimited. And originally, everything was called Green Demolitions. That was our first name. So if you look us up, you'll see like a lot of articles about Green Demolitions. Because our whole market was Greenwich and the surrounding towns, like New Canaan, Westport, Darien, some of the towns in Westchester. And that was our whole world. And everybody knew what demolition meant. And,
right.
and the name Green Demolition was kind of like unleaded gas. It was not a it was a green demolition.
That's great. What a great analogy.
And being an advertising guy, I was taking, my cues from, Trout and Reese, who wrote, Guerrilla Warfare and, Marketing Warfare and these books. And I saw that I needed a name like that. And, one of the things that happened when I worked at the recycling company is I go to these training sessions put on by, the New York State Environmental Department. And people were starting to talk about green. So I knew I had something. And I'll never forget, after I had started Green Demolitions, I was, into my third month doing it full time. I had a meeting with one of the big mansion builders in Greenwich, Hobbs, Inc. They're actually based in New Canaan. And actually, they built Imus's house. His mansion. And they're a big mansion builder. And I had a meeting with Scott Hobbs, who's been one of our really good supporters over the years, one of our good industry advocates. And I'm waiting in his office, and I pick up a Forbes magazine, and there's a picture of the CEO of GE, Jeffrey Immelt, and it says, GE goes green. And I knew I had nailed it as a name and that the green movement was coming on.
Right, right.
And so what happened was, from 2005 to 2008 was really our renaissance phase, because first Greenwich Magazine wrote it up, then the other Greenwich newspapers started writing it up, and then I started opening up these stores, and I didn't really have any money to do it.
Right.
So my first store was in an abandoned restaurant and barn in the Catskills, and was only open Saturdays, and I didn't have any heat or power, but people would come and buy this stuff, and I started to see wow, you know, I had a customer show up. She was the former president of a big retail chain, and she showed up with her BMW and her minx and her high heels, and she bought $100,000 kitchen for like $7,000.
Stop.
It was a white wood mode kitchen with Sub-Zero appliances.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be right back. I told you time would fly, everybody. Steve Feldman, and you're learning why he's a renovation angel. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and SpeakUp networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thank you for being with us. Joining us for this hour is Steve Feldman, president and co-founder of Renovation Angel, America's premier recycler of luxury pre-owned kitchens, and we're talking luxury pre-owned kitchens and renovation items. Steve and his team of professionals have conducted thousands of projects now for members of the Forbes 400, celebrities, sports stars, and high net worth property owners, none of which he can give the names for, which makes me sad because I always want to know the inside scoop. And the Renovation Angel business model is what I call the green trifecta: people, planet, profit, as evidenced by their charitable mission, creating jobs, protecting the earth, and supporting high quality nonprofits. So, Steve, I love your story and just keep on with it. So this woman, high heels mink, walks into the Catskills, right, into your store, buys $7,000, $100,000 worth of, I mean, I want pictures, dude. I want to see what this was, right, for $7,000. So she thinks she died and went to heaven.
Right. And I realized that I had an aftermarket that was waiting for me. And, you know, yes, our better mousetrap is really two things. It's our white glove removals with, you know, covering the whole process so it's very easy for the donor and the architects and the builders to work for us. That's better mousetrap number one. Better mousetrap number two is the aftermarket of buyers. And what we've learned over the years is, you know, these luxury bargain hunters are doctors. They're lawyers. They're dentists. They're business people.
Savvy business, yes, right.
They're savvy business people that know, you know, this woman said, you know, I just sold my apartment in New York. I didn't want to spend $100,000 on a kitchen. She wasn't going to do it. She was going to find a way to get a kitchen for her Millbrook, New York home without paying a lot of money, and she found us. And she also loved the fact that we were supporting charity. So this is amazing now that I look back. I don't know how we did it. From March 2006 to October 2007, only like 19 months, we opened five different stores.
Oh, my gosh. Because, and it was just like a retail store, a resale retail store where people could go in and buy their $100,000 kitchen?
These are retail stores. And the next one was in the Poconos. Then we opened up another one in the Catskills in Bethel, New York, near the Woodstock site. Then we opened up our first store in Connecticut. And then we opened up our first bigger store in Norwalk, Connecticut in 2007. And at this point, I have three stores because, you know, I would always close the lesser of the stores when I opened up another one. But it was a lot of store openings. And, you know, in a sense, it was easy to open up a store. You should just bring your merchandise in and put up a sign and you were open. So here we are.
And you had the inventory. I mean, that's like, to me, even
the inventory was coming in because the real estate boom was on 2005, 2006, 2007. You know, I remember. And again, I wasn't like paying attention to the news. You know, I had zoomed up from 1.5 employees in 2005 to about 40 when I opened my store in Connecticut in 2007.
Wow.
So in 2 years, and at this point, we, you know, we were doing, you know, a few million dollars in donations of these kitchens. It was really, really significant. So, here we are, and it you know, I have my store, and we're, you know, we're getting all this publicity. You know, New York Times did an article in 2007. Then in 2008, we got our best wash of publicity. We got a CNN small business feature. Oh. We got a New York Times full-page article, which was 5 months in the writing. We were picked up by This Old House magazine, Consumer Reports. And then, you know, when the New York Times picks you up, all the other local media, you know, CBS 880 right. Radio.
You have arrived.
Westport papers, yeah. You have arrived. Exactly. And it couldn't have been a better timing, because this really put us into the Manhattan market. We started getting leads from Manhattan. And then, as we all remember, in September 2008, the banking crisis hit.
That's what I was going to say.
And I remember thinking,
you're waking up to this, and I'm thinking, yeah, he said 2007. The next part of the chapter is 2008.
So I'm sitting there in 2008, and we don't see the effect of the banking crisis for 6 months. So I remember thinking, I'm recession-proof. And then the bottom drops out, because our market was Greenwich, and who lived in Greenwich? Wall Street, hedge fund managers.
Right.
Some
right.
of them who were at Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers didn't even have a job. You know, so they were all reinventing themselves. Now all of a sudden, the house that they thought they were going to demolish and flip, well, that market was not there. So we in 2009, it was really one of those, again, those decisions, what am I going to do? And at this point, because of our publicity and because people, word of mouth, the jobs were coming in. I wasn't running around Greenwich. I was, you know, growing the operation,
right,
running
right.
the stores.
Five
you
stores
know,
with 40 employees.
Yeah, yeah. And at this point, it was three stores, but it still was a lot of people. It was a
right,
lot of handling.
Right.
My wife, Lisa Feldman, had come on board in 2007 to be the vice president of operations. And so it was very, you know, it was a lot of, we were learning a lot about, you know, now all of a sudden we had a, you know, medium-sized business with, you know, big payrolls and insurance.
Right,
and it was
right.
a whole different dynamic from the way we had been running it in the early years. So what we did was we started just going out to the marketplace, New York City. We started going to New Jersey, Philadelphia, Long Island. And between 2009 and 2012, we just hung on. You know,
right.
we just worked
yes.
hard.
Like so
and,
many
and
millions about, of businessmen and women around the country. If you can survive,
right.
it's going to be okay.
Right, and we did. And 2009 was our only down year, but then we went up in 2010. We went up again in 2011. And, you know, we then opened up a store in New Jersey. We had some donated space. It was given to us for a year. And we started to see that New Jersey was really a great retail market.
Because and for this Jersey girl,
homes.
I just want everybody to press pause here. See, people make fun of New Jersey, and Steve's not. I am a Jersey girl.
You know, Jersey is a really great business environment.
It is.
Why? Because, you know, you could whatever you can say about New Jersey, they have planned it so that the retail stores are all on these retail highways. So if you know anything about New Jersey, you know everything's on Route 4, Route 17, Route 10, Route 1, Route 46,
right.
You know, Route 23. These are the retail highways that the big box stores and the independent businesses
yes,
open up.
So they line the streets.
We found a 43,000 square foot building, and in 2011 we rented half of it because our other New Jersey store, you know, deal was only for 1 year, and we had three stores, and everything was going fine until two major events. One was the Social Security scare of August 2011. Hey, the government's, you know, so much in debt, they can't pay Social Security. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it wasn't the banking crisis, but a lot of people are like, let's wait on this real estate purchase, let's wait on that renovation. And then we also had the first of two hurricanes that really walloped up. Hurricane Irene, followed by Hurricane Sandy.
And
Hurricane Irene shut down the town of Fairfield. My store was like an island with a moat of water sitting around it. So while not a drop of water got into my store, the town of Fairfield was closed for like 4 days.
Wow.
So between the bad economic news and the hurricanes, all of a sudden it was like, you know, the business, you know, everything got just depressed. And, you know, the people who got their homes whacked by Irene and then Sandy eventually came to buy from us. But at that point, you know, we were really, you know, we were starting to see, hey, we're not getting the inventory we need. The buyers have slowed down. And, you know, my wife and I were faced with, okay, what are we going to do? So in 2012, we made a really bold move. We said, we've got to close our Pennsylvania store. We have to close our Connecticut store. We're going to rent the back of the 43,000 square foot building. We're going to take all 43,000 square feet and put it into one building. And let's be more efficient. And it was definitely more efficient from a logistics point
of view. Right, right. And it's what what entrepreneurs do. You figure out what am I going to do and how am I going to recreate the model so that it's still around.
Exactly. And what it also created was all the inventory in one place, and we became a true destination, not just for regional buyers, but, you know, people would fly in from Michigan, North Carolina, California to shop at our store. And with the growth of the internet, we were gaining buyers nationwide. We started shipping kitchens out nationwide starting in about 2010. And it was kind of an exciting time. We also that year realized that as we expand nationally, Green Demolitions as a name just didn't resonate. Because what do you mean Green Demolition? What is that? People didn't think about tearing down mansions and, you know, a lot of the other major areas. So we introduced the Renovation Angel program. And
how did that come about? Because that's, I mean, naming your company is so significant and so important for any of us who have done that. So how did you pick that name? I want to know the inside scoop.
Well, that's a really interesting story. So my wife and I were in Chicago. We were at a social entrepreneurship conference, and we heard Simon Mawarang speak about his book, you know, and I can't remember the name of it. It was all about cause marketing.
Okay.
You know, I think it was like We First or something. And he was all talking about how these major corporations were partnering with charities. And, you know, up to that point, our main mission was to be like funding, you know, addiction recovery. And, you know, we realized that, you know, not everybody wants to fund addiction recovery. You know, that's not an emotional buzz point. You know, it is for me because I was a recovered addict, but it wasn't for everyone.
Right.
So we came up with the Renovation Angel idea, and we started to diversify that, you know, we would start funding youth at risk, job training, social entrepreneurship, other charities. And we actually had a meeting with one of our board members. He's now our board member. By then, you know, back in 2011, he was just a professional who loved our program. His name is Kimball Derrick. He's a designer and consultant in Cincinnati and Naples. And we came to him and we said, hey, we came up with this idea, Renovation Angel. What do you think of it as a name and a concept? And we actually met with one of the top designers in Chicago, Susan Fredman, at that same meeting. And they both loved the idea. And they said, yes, this sounds good. So we, you know, came up with the name. We trademarked it. We created a website. And we thought, how are we going to launch Renovation Angel? And at the time, you know, we never reveal who our celebrities are,
right.
But we thought, okay, we'll ask permission. We'll kind of go out of the box and see, you know, if somebody would do this. Well, Edie Falco is donating a kitchen to us.
Oh, gosh, awesome. And, of course, she said yes.
Yes, and she's, you know, Sopranos, Nurse Jackie.
Yes.
And we said, would you come to our showroom for photo shoots, you know, and we're going to get some press. And she said, absolutely. So she came for 5.5 hours. And she was delightful.
Very, very cool.
And we have wonderful photographs. And there was a great feature in Success Magazine that was written in 2012 on Edie Falco donating her kitchen to us and about her life and about us. And it was great. And
was it a great kitchen, Steve?
It was a really nice kitchen.
Awesome.
It actually went to some island in South Carolina.
Unbelievable.
So, Haley's Island, South Carolina, is where her kitchen went. Yeah, it was a very contemporary kind of gray kitchen. I got pictures of it.
What a cool kitchen to say, this is Edie Falco's kitchen. I mean, that's something I tell people. We really need to reel back a little bit because we glossed over things that I know and you know and that our listeners don't know. There's two things that I'd like you to explain a little more, which is a part of your stellar branding. Talk about what it means when you talk about the white glove moving. And then talk about the benefit to the homeowners. We didn't go over that at all. Why they're incentivized, so it's what I call a full circle. It's like cradle to cradle, because there are benefits for the homeowners that are, it just, everybody wins. The planet wins, Renovation Angel wins, and the homeowners win.
Well, I'm so glad that we can, you know, really explain this. So, you know, if, you know, people say, hey, it's too good to be true, and I'll tell you why it is too good to be true, but it really is true. So we have put together this crew of experienced contractors, truck drivers. We actually use a full-time manager at the CIA who runs a background check company for the estate world to vet and to Skype interview all our potential employees. We've been doing this for over 2 years. And
got it, because
we're bringing
there is
in
exposure
this background
there.
Check.
Yes.
Yes. We're bringing in this background check,
wow,
experienced, trained crew to carefully dismantle your kitchen. So we're coming in. So let's talk about, before we talk about the benefits, let's say what really goes on. And,
yes,
and the best way to understand it is to look at the automobile world. In the automobile world, you're buying, you know, a new Mercedes from, you know, Chapman Auto or one of their luxury cars.
Hopefully.
They don't sell Mercedes. Yeah, you know. And so when Chapman brings you your new car to your estate or your mansion, they don't take your old car and throw it in a metal dumpster.
Right.
And they certainly don't take your old car and say, okay, we're just taking it away and we're going to sell it and keep all the money. But that's what goes on in the kitchen world all day long. So what happens to these kitchens? They either go in the dumpster.
Which is like so horrific for me to even imagine. What waste on so many levels.
And exactly. They go in the dumpster, or the homeowner's feeling bad, kind of like put it in storage and try to figure out what to do with it. And, you know, I tell one story about, you know, somebody in Miami did this and it cost them, you know, $45,000 to remove it, store it, sell it, and they maybe sold it for $23,000 and they lost, you know, $22,000 recycling their kitchen. Well, that's absurd. Nobody's going to do that.
Right.
And so, or, you know, these are demolition houses and, you know, the homeowner's from New York and they're buying in California and they're not there, and all of a sudden the stuff kind of just disappears, the cabinets, the appliances, the bath fixtures, and who's taking it? Well, people have access to that job site. So
unbelievable.
It's not,
stuff that
it's
we
not,
don't think about. Like, I would never have thought about that.
About it. Nobody's thinking about it because the kitchen industry, unlike the automobile industry, never built the infrastructure. I mean, you think about auto dealers. They have lots for cars. You think about auto auctions. You think about, you know, and then you think about how cars go through, you know, pre-owns and then into fleets, and then they become parts, and then eventually the parts get recycled. Well, that's really efficient. The kitchen industry, they never figured out recycling, and that's our opportunity. So we come in and we save the homeowner the demolition cost. Now, in New York City, it costs $5,000 to demo your kitchen. Imagine, $5,000 just to throw that kitchen out. And in the suburbs, it depends. You know, in California, it probably costs that much, too.
Right,
you know?
Right. Just for the kitchen.
You know, maybe
just the demo
the
part,
polished.
Yeah.
And so you, here are your alternatives. You're either throwing it out and paying a cost, or you're saving that cost, and then you're getting the tax deduction on the fair market value.
Because it's going to a nonprofit that then funds other charities. Exactly. I mean, this is like the sweet spot for me. It's really, really the whole circle.
Absolutely. And what our really better mousetrap and what our real benefit is to the industry is that homeowner who, you know, probably felt a little guilty, like they just bought a $10 million house, the kitchen was renovated 5 years ago.
And they feel
don't really
a little
like
guilty. I'm really weeping over here. It's great.
But, you know,
it's really great. No, it's wonderful.
They don't want it to be thrown out, but they don't, you know, they don't want a job assignment, and their contractors don't want a job assignment, and their designers don't want a job assignment. So they find us, and we do everything for them. And that's where our jobs program comes from. You know, we have 36 people that handle everything from the initial phone call to the inspections to the evaluations to all the paperwork. Then we remove it. We truck it. We pack it. We bring it back to our store. We sell it. We then deliver it. Then we complete all the tax paperwork. So we've figured out, you know, the 8-step process so that the homeowner really is just basically giving us access to their home, agreeing to give it to us, and then it's very, very simple. And this is why we get so many donor kudos. So the benefits are really three things. It's getting your free demolition.
Right.
It's getting your tax deduction, and then it's reducing your disposal costs. And what people like about us is a few things. First of all, they love our mission that we're creating jobs. We are creating jobs. Here are our benchmarks since 2005. We've created $16.8 million worth of jobs. and our payroll is currently $1.95 million a year.
Unreal.
This is from items being thrown out. They love that. They love the fact that not only are we just recycling, we've earned $2.2 million for charitable outreach programs relating to youth at risk, addiction recovery, job training, and social entrepreneurship.
So hold that thought. You're not going to believe this.
Okay.
You're not.
Yep.
But guess what? We're at the next break. And for me, sitting here, it felt like 2 minutes. And I'm getting the two-minute warning that we have to go to the next break. Hold that thought. We'll go on with that. And I have a couple of really important questions I want to make sure we cover, including how to find you and how the process works. Everybody, stay here with me. I hope it's as riveting for you as it is for me. More from Steve Feldman, the renovation angel himself. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's world is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's world sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're having as much fun as I am learning and listening and improving your environmental IQ. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for listening and be a part of the Mrs. Green's World community. Joining us for this hour that is in a time warp somehow is Steve Feldman, the president and co-founder of Renovation Angel, America's premier recycler of luxury pre-owned kitchens and renovation items. Renovation Angel is an entrepreneurial charity that goes into luxury homes that are being torn down, where all of that amazing, expensive, high-quality stuff might otherwise end up in the landfill, or in someone else's kitchen that really didn't have a right to it. We can add that. And they recycle the luxury kitchens and renovation items, sell them, and donate the profits to charity. That's part of it. They also have created jobs, $14 million in jobs. I think that's what you said. I mean, many, many millions of dollars.
It's actually up to $16.8 million
now. So that has to be an update on your website. And then diverted, yes. You know, the protecting the environment, because you talk about your three pillars, which are creating jobs, protecting the earth, and supporting high-quality nonprofits. And I so have to ask you that, Steve, because you're my friend. What does make a high-quality nonprofit? And then supporting charity, you've done like $2.5 million. I want to ask you a question. It's like I keep thinking of all these things. Just ask Steve, before you started this, what was your environmental IQ? Were you aware of waste? Were you living a sustainable life? Has it been a journey like it was for me, where I started waking up and waking up and waking up, thinking I was a good steward of the planet, and then realizing how much more I could do to have an impact? What was your mind thinking in terms of the planet and waste and all of that when you started?
Well, my background was my dad was an environmental biologist.
There you go.
You know, okay. Talked about Rachel Carson's Silent Spring.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, he was one of the few people to read that book. He was doing pollution studies
on
the Hudson River. And, you know, he knew the people at the Clearwater. And so the seeds were planted, you know.
Big time. I had no idea about that part of your story.
And so he was definitely, you know, always, you know, and an appreciation for nature. I mean, I spent my life doing, you know, nature walks with my dad, spending time outdoors. And so that was the seed number one. The probably the big seed for me was when I was 25, I got an injury playing softball, and I went to a natural chiropractor who, you know, got me on a whole change of diet and introduced to organic foods. So, you know, it was really like a health that brought me into, you know, awareness that, like, you know, I really don't want to eat, you know, processed, chemical-filled fast foods. And so that's a whole nother thing. So that's really became my, you know, personal journey. And to this day, you know, I still eat, you know, mostly organic foods. And so, you know, recycling.
So it's a way of being for you. It's not a nonprofit you started. It's a way that you and your wife, I know that, show up in the world and make a continuous difference. Okay.
It makes so much sense. So, you know, going back to, you know, some of our benchmarks, we figure we've kept 27 million pounds out of the landfill. So, you know, so when people realize we're doing all this good work, you know, creating jobs, earning money for charities, we don't fundraise. Like, when somebody calls me and gets, you know, one of our donations, they're not going on a list. They're not going to get an annual appeal. We don't invite them to events.
Right, it's a one and done.
We ask them to refer us to their friends, and that's it, you know, and that's it. So, you know, our relationship with our donors, they feel very safe. And what's very interesting is I don't think there are too many nonprofits that actually fund other nonprofits. So,
I don't think so either. It's a great model. I am involved in one, it's a different model, but we have a charity here called Angel Charity for Children. And we are a nonprofit that raises money to give money to nonprofits. It's a wonderful philanthropic, but it's very different. It's not selling things. I want to ask you this. With the when you're doing this, it's like it's always wanting to know the inside scoop. Are you typically working with those high net worth individuals or the sports star or whatever? Or are you working with, I love DEMA, and I did some radio shows with them, but the Domestic Estate Managers Association, of which you are co-president of the Scottsdale chapter as we speak, do they work with you? A lot of the people, like what I would call some of the highest profile people that I've had on my show, I find them surprisingly approachable. Most of the biggest names are down to earth. In this case, though, if you have five homes, you really can't talk to Renovation Angel about home number five getting, you know, this tax deduction and all that. So who are you working with mostly, or is there a generalization? That was a long question, but I know you're following me.
Absolutely. So our referrals come really from two major groups. We do get referrals directly from homeowners who, you know, find us online through Google. They heard about us from a friend or their industry professional said, why don't you call Renovation Angel, and they contact us.
Right, right.
I would say the largest group would be the industry professionals, and there's really two categories. There's, you know, design build professionals. They include, you know, architects, builders, kitchen designers who, you know, they're actually doing the kitchen redesign. The interior decorators and designers have become a much bigger influence in the super luxury markets because a lot of people want an interior designer to run their whole project. But we also get referrals from real estate agents. And then, you know, with the economy being soft after 2008, I decided I needed more verticals. So, you know, what's a vertical? It's a whole nother category of professionals. So, you know, I tell the story, I got a call from an estate manager in New Jersey, and he had a project, and the project got delayed. And then a second estate manager from that same property called me a few months later and said, I'm now taking over this project. So this is how my mind works, Gina. One estate manager, good. Two estate managers, better. 100, the best. I get on Google. I find Domestic Estate Management Association. And I call Michael Wright, the co-founder and vice president, and he says, estate managers hate to waste. They're very green conscious. We're having our first national convention in Los Angeles. Please come and speak.
Yeah, and that was a good day. They're awesome. That group is so awesome, and they're so much fun.
And so, yes, I mean, and for us, DEMA really was a lot of things. It was taking everything we did and bringing it to another level of professionalism. We've had DEMA come and train our staff. We have protocols in place. You know, we met the background check company, Verify Vetting Solutions through DEMA. And so we've made a lot of wonderful you know, what we call preferred supplier contacts through DEMA. So,
right.
You know, at this point, our jobs do come from a diversity. You know, it's design build, and then it's, you know, what I call the luxury gatekeepers. I mean, we get jobs from family offices. We get jobs from mortgage brokers. We get jobs from, obviously, estate managers. Personal assistants will call us. So it could be anybody who's the influencer with that high net worth person. And obviously, the busier and wealthier, the less we're going to hear from them directly, and the more we're going to hear from, you know, their gatekeeper.
And here's the thing, a big takeaway for me that I just think it's a huge takeaway for me for the show. When you're talking about this kind of who your customers are, confidentiality is key, and you have them vetted by someone from the CIA that puts them through a process of, you have to have trusted employees, because they're going into homes that I would like get dressed up in an outfit to go in to just see some of these, meet some of these people and be in their homes. I mean, that part of your business, I would think, has to be such added value. These real estate managers, these estate managers, I loved learning all about DEMA, because they don't talk about who their clients are. The confidentiality the privacy and the caliber of people involved in DEMA, to me, I could wax poetic about it, because they take their clients' privacy as probably their highest core value to protect those people that they are hired to work for. It was amazing to me.
Absolutely. And you know, what's great about Domestic Estate Management Association is it's creating a new, you know, level of professionalism, both from the estate managers and the preferred suppliers. And we get together and we learn how to, you know, grow our businesses, how to better serve in these wealthy estates. And, you know, it's definitely a don't ask, don't tell environment. So, you know, when we talk about celebrities, you know, there have been a few that have championed our cause over the years.
Right.
But we really don't want, you know, I would rather have, you know, we hardly ever play that up, you know, because for us, we want to let everyone know it is about getting this thing recycled, about being anonymous. And, you know, when we get positive press, it's always, you know, every once in a while we'll get, you know, a donor to say, yes, I'll get interviewed. But usually
it's
they're,
not what it's,
you know,
about. That's what I think is so impressive about this, that it's really about, it's an eco-friendly, environmentally friendly, social justice, and comes into this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder if you ever thought about this. I think this is a great question that my friend actually gave to me. Did you ever think about measuring the impact, the environmental impact of not having to build those new appliances that would have been purchased new if they hadn't been recycled? I mean, there's another, you know, metric there that you're saving even more of not having to manufacture more stuff. That's one of our biggest problems, overconsumption and overproduction.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we think about it two ways. We think about it in terms of the environmental impact. I mean, when you buy a pre-owned kitchen, that kitchen's already off-gassed. I mean, it's all the, you know, it's a very safe...
All those horrible things that we know. Yes.
You know, and the fact that these things can get reused, you know, it's really a good thing for the industry, because, you know, what happens is, you know, people get to have a Sub-Zero refrigerator or a Wolf Range, which they've never had before, you know, and that maybe when they, you know, build their next house or move in, they're going to be like, hey, I'll buy one new because I can't buy one pre-owned anymore, you know, because, you know, so it's really, and it's also an impressive thing that these Sub-Zeros last 20 years, and people say, wow, I got a 10-year-old refrigerator, I'm going to get another 10 or more years out of it.
Right. And it's not going into the landfill, which people put their stuff in the landfill, that good stuff. It's like, every time I hear that, I'm like a crazy woman. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. None of that has to go in landfill ever.
Absolutely. And so, you know, for us, you know, I would love, you know, we're so busy recycling that sometimes we don't even have time to, you know, measure things like what is our environmental impact.
Right.
We're starting to do that now by having our benchmarks and updating them every year. And the other thing I started thinking about was, what about, you know, of those 4,700 kitchens that we recycled, what about the impact it had on the aftermarket of remodeling contractors and granite companies and paint companies and flooring companies that were able to sell their products and services because a remodeling job happened. A lot
in
of
the
our
right
clients,
way, in such the right way. There's a right way and a wrong way. And this is, you know, one of my friends here who's another sponsor and really dear friend, he does post-construction waste and makes something out of almost every single thing that he collects. It turns into something else and doesn't go in the landfill. So go ahead. I don't want to digress because we don't have that much time left and I have more questions.
Well, I mean, so anyway, so we're creating jobs for, you know, independent contractors and designers. We have one designer in New Jersey. She's done at least four or five projects for her clients. And, you know, she's able to get her fees, get them their materials at a very big discount, and everybody's happy. So, you know, there are a lot of stakeholders here.
It's really a ripple effect. And you have expanded to take other products than just kitchen when you talk about other, you know, renovation items. Tell us about some of the other things that have been targeted and that are successful.
So when we go into a house, many times it's not just the kitchen being renovated.
Right, I want to know about the bathroom sink.
Yeah, so we take out beautiful vanities, we take freestanding tubs, we take pedestal sinks, we take obviously, you know, the faucets.
Right.
We go in and we take lighting, we take other built-ins. You know, we take closet systems, you know, not the particle board ones, but like the solid wood closets that people may have spent $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 paying for into
just
a mansion.
Just for the wood, probably. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We take high-end windows, you know, copper-clad windows and windows that are really new and energy efficient. We take interior doors that are high-end, solid doors with the hardware. We take fireplace mantles. We take generators. You know, we'll even take recent heating.
Which you
systems,
need back you there know. In New Jersey. We don't need a lot of generators here unless it's too hot. But I know one of my friends after Sandy, I mean, thank God she had one. And she was helping other families because she had a generator. And it was a big deal because she lives in Red Bank and it was out. There were trees. Why is it taking so long to get it fixed? And she said, maybe like the five trees that it would take to get to my house are, you know, across the road. But we cannot go off. We have 5 minutes left, which maybe even a little less. But I really want you to talk a little bit about, I just got the 3-minute warning. Steve, how can this be happening? So about some of the charities. I want to know what when you say, I loved it, a high quality nonprofit. So there's a vetting level for that. What do you describe as how would you describe a high quality nonprofit? What's the criteria for that?
So we're looking for charities similar to us in structure. We're looking for independent charities that were started to help people that are, doing an amazing job of using their money. You know, probably our best and biggest charity right now is Focus North America. So they're feeding hungry kids around America. They're helping homeless get jobs. So they have really innovative programs. Like they're giving homeless job training, and then they're working at the concession stands at the Pittsburgh Steelers Stadium.
Wow. What's the name of their charity?
It's Focus North America.
Focus North America. Okay.
And last year we gave them $100,000. So they were, of the $130,000 we gave away last year, they were the lion's share.
And that can make a difference. $100,000 makes such a big difference than $5,000. Yes.
My God, for them, it was huge because they buy food at pennies on the dollars from these big food companies.
Right.
And then they distribute it on the weekends, in the summers, to these kids. And they're helping about 250,000 children across America. And they've got centers from California to Pittsburgh and throughout the Midwest. So they're really what we consider a high-quality charity in the sense that they're using their dollars. They're like 94% efficient. And the money is going help.
And they might be dancing in the streets with Pittsburgh coming up. We got some Pittsburgh Steeler action going on, which is really good.
That's right.
I'm
sure they are.
We are friends, and you said I could interrupt you. I want to get some really important information out there about your website is renovationangel.org. Your Facebook page is Renovation Angel. Twitter is Renovation Angel. Instagram, which is my favorite social media and the only one that Mrs. Green does totally by herself, it's renovation_angel, and you have a Pinterest account at Renovation Angel. And there are some good, really good things to read about and learn about on Renovation Angel website. And I just want to talk about two upcoming shows because I'm excited about them. Molly Griffiths from Tucson Medical Center, who's doing an inside look about health coaching. I mean, you hear about all kinds of coaching. She's a health coach. And of course, TMC are innovators in so many ways, I can't even articulate it. And then February 4th, we're going to take another track, which I love. We have Emmanuel Dogger, another person that I've been wanting to get on the show. I heard him speak at the UN when I was there last April, and he's going to talk about living from the heart. And he is an environmentalist. He survived a war in Syria. It's just an amazing story about social justice and the difference he's making. Steve Feldman, you rock. Say hello to my friends at DEMA. And I know this is not the last our paths will cross. Make it a great green day, everybody. Thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.